Expressing the Heart of God. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Remember, Jesus Christ will not receive a bride with spot, wrinkle, or any such thing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And we have a special guest on, good friend, this evening. Before we get to Ron Brown, I just wanted to comment that certainly about 2 weeks ago, I made a statement that I had read that the United States Treasury was going to pull pennies and nickels out of circulation beginning the 1st of January. There were several articles on the Internet making that statement. It sounded very logical, and somebody sent me an email this morning and said, the man who wrote the article has recounted it, and I checked it out. That's what they said, but I wanted to be sure, so I called the United States Treasury in Washington, D.C., and I talked to a gentleman in the press division who assured me that the United States Treasury is not, or let me repeat that, is not planning on pulling pennies and nickels out of circulation the first of the year. So I wanted to clarify that. We try to always be very accurate in what we say. And then I know many of you would certainly be overcome with a concern about the tragedy that took place in Connecticut with the killing of 26 people, so at least 18 children shot there, and I think we should be concerned. It's a terrible tragedy. But isn't it interesting that nobody talks, never talks now, about the 46,000 people who've been killed in Syria by the terrorists that we are funding? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are funding and arming and training the terrorists who've killed 46,000 civilians in Syria, lots of them children, probably thousands of them children. We never talk about that. I wonder why. Could it possibly be that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king? I would simply point out that they're going to try to use the tragedy in Connecticut for gun legislation, and I believe we should have gun legislation. We should have federal legislation that requires everyone to have a gun, or at least anybody who wants to be able to carry a gun, because in the communities where they have concealed carry laws, and anybody who wants to, who's not a felon, can carry a gun, you have markedly less crimes and far fewer violence, crimes of violence and gun crimes. When everybody has the right to carry a gun, or the incidence of shooting goes down, and had they allowed that in that school, if the teachers there or somebody had had a gun, many of those children would be alive today. And we should start talking about politicizing this issue, politicizing the tragedy, to use it so that we can arm the people so that they will not, of course, be subject and helpless when some madman comes in with a weapon. And incidentally, over in China, somebody's just stabbed 22 children. 22 children were stabbed with a knife by some maniac there at a high school, or probably at a grammar school or kindergarten, just today. Well, with that as the background, our guest, Ron Brown, thanks very much for being with us, Ron.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Tell us what's going on financially in America, in Europe, in China. Where is America headed financially?
You know, I like to start, if I can take just a few minutes, to discuss two trends which I think are accelerating and gaining momentum and exposing the total corruption, fraud, and desperation of the government as they attempt to hold this house of cards together. one of them we've discussed before. I say there's two concepts that I think are ruling the world market today. The first is the scriptures and common sense simply tell us that the borrower becomes the slave to the lender. And, of course, we all know the revised golden rule, which says he who owns the gold makes the rule. So if you look at the world today, especially Western civilization, Europe and the U.S., which are so hopelessly in debt, there is really no solution to the debt problem.
Hold on, there is no solution. We'll be back in a moment. Ron, go right ahead. You were just talking about the problem that we have these massive debts, and there's simply no way out of them. And then, of course, the government's made so many promises to take care of the people, and Social Security and Medicare, and we can't even afford them today. And there's 79 million baby boomers in the process of retiring now. 79 on top of the 56 are already million already retired. How are we going to be able to pay the 79 million when we're having difficulty paying the existing 56 million? Go right ahead.
So the only thing the politicians can do now is try to put off the day of reckoning and so-called kick the can down the road. And in order to do that, they have to run the printing press to bail out their buddies in the banking system and Wall Street. But as they run the printing press, then they threaten the credibility of the currency. So to fight that battle, they have no choice, and they'll use every dirty trick in the book to manipulate and suppress the price of gold and silver, simply because gold and silver historically are the barometer of confidence in their Ponzi scheme. So here's the key to understanding this. Because I get calls all the time thinking, well, how come the gold won't go up based on what's happened, for example, yesterday? But as long as you get the price of gold off these commodity exchanges in New York and London, where you have a bunch of speculators and idiots trading not gold and silver, but paper contracts on high leverage, and you have these hedge funds and speculators on the long side trying to bet that gold's going to go up, and they're more speculators. They're not fundamentalists like people that buy the real thing. But they're going heads up against these international bankers like Morgan Chase, and Goldman Sachs, and Deutsche Bank, who have unlimited funds to play the game. So they can pick any time they want to and just ambush the market and overwhelm it and drive the price down. For example, back on November the 15th, it was reported that in 1 5-minute period, there was a single order filled for 25,000 gold contracts, drove the price down $20 in 5 minutes. See, 25,000 contracts of 100 ounces each is 2.5 million ounces of gold that these bankers sold in a 5-minute period. And that overwhelmed the players on the other side, forced margin calls, and to drive the price down. They did the same thing in the silver market in a 10-minute period. And on that same day, they sold 38,400 contracts of 5,000 ounces each, which is about 192 million ounces silver, which is a third of annual production for the whole world. So you can see how if these bankers have the ability...
Hold the thought, Ron, and we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Ron is talking about what's going on, and certainly, basically, we have debt that we can never get out of. People in countries are in debt, and corporations are in debt, and government is in debt, and basically, as Ron points out, the only thing that the politicians can do is simply run the printing presses and try to put off the day of reckoning. It's coming sooner or later when the whole system collapses, but they want it to happen, certainly, after they're out of office and they've got their pension and they're set for life and their pension will be indexed to inflation. They know inflation's coming. They know that the dollar is going to be destroyed, but they want to put it off as long as they can. Now, Ron Sitley says that a lot of people come to him and say, but why isn't the price of gold and silver going up? It ought to be going up, certainly with all the money that they're printing. And, of course, they're lying to us about inflation. They tell us it's 2%, and that's a frank lie. You go to shadowstats.com. John Williams analyzes this independently. He doesn't get a check from the government, and he's not sworn to secrecy. And he said the inflation rate's 8 to 10%, which really means, of course, that they keep telling us, well, our gross domestic product is not doing too well. It's only about 2%, but that's pretty good. Well, that's fine if they're telling the truth about inflation, because they say inflation's only 2%. But if you realize it's 8 to 10%, then we're really running a negative gross domestic product, which means we're in a recession. And we really are in a recession. We're probably losing 2 to 4% of the gross domestic product every year. But they can't tell the American people the truth. And of course, Ron points out that certainly if you watch the commodity exchanges, you'll find that the banks are making massive short sales on both gold and silver. It's all in paper. They certainly don't have the gold. They don't have the silver. But they're selling them short and driving the price down artificially. But of course, one of these days, they're not going to be able to, of course, to meet the shorts. Calls are going to have to provide the gold and silver they don't have. The other day, suddenly there was a massive silver sale equal to a third of the entire year's silver production. But it's all manipulation, ladies and gentlemen. They're frantically manipulating the commodity markets to keep them from going up. Because when they start going up, the people, the invisible government, the banksters, call them what you will lose control. Ron, you pick up the story.
But they do have an Achilles heel, and it's starting to be exposed very rapidly. And that is, every time Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs and these big bankers ambush the price to drive it down artificially, the kings of the East, who are our creditors, get this big old Chester get grin on their face, and they say, Morgan, we certainly appreciate the discount. Why don't you just ship us another 10 million ounces? So what's happening is, the Eastern Bloc nations, who are our creditors, are squeezing these Western bankers who are caught in the trap because they're naked short hundreds of millions of ounces, and they're being forced to deliver on the gold and silver that they don't have. So you got to ask the question. See, John Embry put out just a week or so ago that China alone will import 775 tons of gold this year, which represents a third of world production. So that tells me three things, or at least it brings up 3 points. One, that can't go on forever. One nation is not going to be able to continue to import a third of the world production. But two, it tells me that the Eastern Bloc nations see the end game in sight, because it's no longer two steps forward, one step back. They're going to the juggler, and they're squeezed as much as they can, as quick as they can. Which brings up the third question. You've got to ask the question, where in the heck is all that gold coming from to deliver to the kings of the East? And the truth is, it's coming out now, especially Jim Willie is the one that has pointed it out, that his sources tell him that over the last 20 years, the banks have basically stolen 40,000 tons of clients and government gold to deliver to the people that are demanding it. And that since March of this year, 6,000 tons have been delivered from England to China. So you get the impression that they're running out of rabbits, keep kicking this can down the road, and they're having to do ever more desperate things to keep the system from collapsing.
Well, of course, Ron Paul keeps asking for an audit of the American gold, and the government says, why, you have to just trust us. We would never lie to you. We will tell you the gold is there, but we're not going to let you see it. Oh, no siree. Oh, we don't want to endanger that gold. That's why we can't let you see it. But trust us. We would never lie to you. We have the gold, and I frankly don't think so. I don't think that Ron Paul thinks so. I don't think that anybody's analyzing what going on really believes what the government is saying is true, because you can tell when a politician is lying because his lips are moving. And the great tragedy is, of course, the power of the world is shifting from the United States to China. Suddenly a number of countries over there, we're talking about China and Indonesia and Japan and South Korea and India, are planning on setting up a separate bloc, and they're going to use it probably either the Chinese currency or a different currency as the reserve currency of the world. And once that becomes well known, once people begin losing confidence in the dollar, all these countries that are holding trillions and trillions of American dollars in reserve to back their currency, they're going to start unloading those dollars. And when that happens, what's going to happen to the value of the dollar, Ron?
Well, in fact, it's already come out that the Fed is having to monetize 90% of our debt as we speak. So what we're, what you're saying is totally correct. It's already happening. The foreigners are unwilling to buy our debt because they know the dollar that we're spending beyond our means and we'll never pay them back. So they're refusing not only to buy more bonds to finance our ongoing deficits, they're in truth saying we've been accumulating your dollars for years and now we want to dump them. So the flight out of the dollar is accelerating. And just as you mentioned, there's the countries of the world, the BRIC countries in particular, are developing their own system to circumvent the dollar as the world's reserve currency. And as you do that, less and less people will trust the dollar, and the flight out of the dollar will just accelerate until it just reaches the crescendo, and we're getting close to it, I think.
But, of course, what people don't understand is that people have the idea sound is the dollar. The dollar is no longer sound. It has no value. It's all a matter of perception. It's a matter of illusion. And when people suddenly realize that this is a fiat currency with nothing behind it, and they start unloading it, the value can drop literally overnight. It's happened time and again through history, and it was, I believe it's being designed to happen here. And, of course, what's going to happen is, certainly, you'll still have $100,000, perhaps, but it won't buy much of anything. And we will see the purchasing power of our currency go down, and with that, it will mean that the pensions, the annuities, certainly anything we have in bonds, anything we have in insurance policy, the dollars will still be there, but they'll become increasingly of less value. And this is the problem, is that certainly when things like this happen, the vast majority of the people not understanding the monetary system are simply almost instantaneously impoverished, and the life savings, what they've worked their whole life to accumulate, is simply destroyed in a matter of a couple of weeks. I know my we knew some people, they had $1 million. This woman kept that $1 million in her mattress because she didn't trust the bank. She was in Germany. And they were dollars, they were in marks. And within about 2 weeks, this woman who had 1 million marks and now had 1 million marks that had was worth about 25 cents. And she almost instantaneously became totally impoverished. Go right ahead, Ron.
Well, you know, as the debt structure gets bigger and bigger and bigger and harder to sustain, the government and the bankers do ever more desperate things the system from collapsing, which brings up the second concept that I want to discuss. And I would ask anyone that's listening here that has a pencil and paper, simply write down the word rehypothecation, because that is the vehicle that's going to lead to the legal plunder of private money in this country and around the world. So to explain rehypothecation, let me first start and explain what hypothecation. Hypothecation is, for example, if you take out a mortgage on your house, you hypothecate or pledge your house as collateral to that loan, thereby establishing the legal precedent that if you don't make your loan payment, they can just come in and foreclose and take your house. Rehypothecation is a totally different animal, and it first reared its ugly head about a year ago when MF Global went under. And that's when John Corzine, the head of the ex-governor of New Jersey, was the CEO of MF Global, and he made a wild speculation on the euro, and he placed his bet through Morgan Chase. And when the bet went sour, somehow MF Global's clients simply lost $1.5 billion of segregated funds, just disappeared from their account.
They were segregated. They were not supposed to be able to take those funds out. They were actually like a bank deposit. But, of course, when it happened, of course, these people had absolutely no protection, no guarantee at all. And many of these people were almost instantaneously impoverished. Go right ahead.
Then about 6 or 7 months ago, another one came to the surface, a company called PFG Best. And when they went bankrupt, their clients lost about $200 million. But then finally, another one came to the surface, and actually a company called Sentinel, who back in 2007, so this is no new kid on the block, they went belly up, and their clients lost $225 million. and the clients have been a little upset about it. They've been fighting it through the court system, and it finally went to the Federal Appeals Court, who issued a verdict about a month ago. But here's what happened. Sentinel took out a $312 million loan to Mellon Bank in New York. They used the proceeds of that loan to start their own trade desk, and they weren't very good traders, obviously. They went bankrupt, and somehow, in the bankruptcy, Sentinel's clients lost $225 million.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a minute. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, Ron, so didn't these people have any sort of insurance? Did the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Company, insure any of these deposits?
That doesn't apply towards the brokerage firm, does it?
No, it really doesn't, and that's why I wanted you to bring that out. Right. If you put your money with any sort of a brokerage firm, if you're going to leave it, at least leave it to a bank. Although, as of the 1st of January, why you'll only be insured up to $250,000. Before that, of course, it was unlimited. But right now, starting the 1st of January, you'll only be insured, at least my understanding, up to $250,000. So if you've got more than that in a bank account, you better have it moved by the 1st of January.
Now, just to wrap it up, see, every one of those instances I gave was an example of rehypothecation. And see, really, you have no excuse, because if you had a 20-power magnifying glass and you were an expert in legalese, you could have read in the small print of your contract, which says the institution you're dealing with can literally pledge your segregated funds as collateral for whatever they're doing. So if you take that to its full extreme, one of these days we may walk into a bank and cash a check, and they're going to say, I'm sorry, sir, you don't have any money in your account. And you're going to say, what do you mean there's no money? Well, we apologize, but we pledged your account as collateral on a real estate deal that went sour. While we're sorry it happened, really there's nothing you can do about it, because we have the legal precedent that we can do that. And see, that's the legal plunder I see them using, because when you look at all the gold and silver that have been disappearing from people's accounts, are they possibly going to use this rehypothecation to give themselves the legal right to have done that? In other words, steal people's money. So it's frightening how desperate they're getting. It just shows me we're approaching the end of the game, because when you start doing things that corrupt and evil, see, even a con artist likes to create the illusion that he's honest. But when they do things that are so blatantly corrupt, you've got to wonder if they're not running out of rabbits, running out of rope.
Oh, I'm sure they are, and I think that more and more people who are keeping their money in bank accounts, in fact, are keeping what they have and what they've worked for their whole lives in money, and however it is kept, I think they're in for real trouble. If they're leaving it with somebody else, they can run off with it, or certainly use it as pledge for something else. But certainly the other thing is, of course, I fear that the value of the currency is going to be progressively eroded and increasingly eroded in the coming months and certainly in the coming years as we move into an inflationary spiral. What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
No, absolutely. And the problem is, of course, as you do these ever more desperate things to keep kicking the can down the road, you start to destroy confidence. And when you destroy confidence in a system that's based on confidence, you have a serious problem. So as more and more people lose confidence in the banking system and brokerage firms and stock market, they start to seek the refuge and put their money in real things, and gold and silver, of course, is the main thing that people...
I'm going to ask you just to speak up just a little louder, Ron.
Okay. In other words, as people lose confidence in the paper system, they start to put their assets in something tangible and real, and gold and silver, of course, is one of the main recipients of that. And so you're seeing the demand for gold and silver accelerating. And as that happens, you have all these paper assets that have camouflaged the fraud.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Ron Brown, and Ron actually sells gold and silver. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But you're going to have to call in about the next 2 or 3 minutes, otherwise, Chris, you'll have to wait till after the half hour, and because our producer has to do some mechanical work here. So if you have something you'd like to say right now, call 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, or you're going to have to wait until after the half hour break. Well, certainly, Ron, are you seeing more people, any increase in the number of people who are really becoming very concerned about the stability of our currency and turning to purchase gold and silver? Certainly, that's your business, so you would have your finger, your pulse on the on what's going on.
You know, what's interesting, Dr. Stan, I've been in this business for 32 years now, but I would say over the last year, probably 60 to 70% of my business is from people who were referred by existing clients. And a lot of these existing clients who were buying a little bit, maybe putting 5 or 10% of their money in gold and silver 10, 20, 30 years ago, they're now coming and say, I don't know where else to put my money, and they're just going all in. So I'm getting much, much bigger orders than I've ever gotten in. People have to realize I'm just a one-man operation working out of my house that don't even have a yellow page ad. But people are starting to see the handwriting on the wall, and they're seeking the refuge of gold and silver. And there's so little of it out there compared to the amount of paper money in circulation that at some point, it's going to happen in the not-too-distant future, the dealers are just going to run out of gold and silver, and that's when it's going to explode, as all these scandals of paper gold and silver are exposed, and people realize the only thing that counts is what you have in your grubby little hand. So we've got a crescendo or a collapse coming and a panic in the gold and silver, and it probably happens sometime in 2013.
Well, you know, I think the hardest thing is for most people to really realize that this monetary system, this wonderful society we've had, it really is not going to continue because it's all built upon debt. Massive federal debt today. Why, 46 cents out of every dollar the federal government spent, they have to borrow. That's the latest figure. 46 cents out of every dollar the federal government spends has to be borrowed. And of course, how long can they continue simply living on borrowed money? When are they going to begin paying the money back? And the truth of the matter is, there's no way the federal government can ever pay the money back, because the national debt is not $10 trillion, it's $16 trillion. If you look and use the general accepted accounting principles, that's GAAP. GAAP, General Accepted Accounting Principles, which every corporation in America is required to use by law, by the federal law. And the only corporation doesn't use that is the federal corporation, the federal government. If you use GAAP accounting principles, the federal debt is well over $85-86 trillion, according to John Williams at shadowstats.com, and will never be repaid. And this is the tragedy. Most people don't know. They don't want to believe this. They don't want this wonderful utopian society we have to end. But I fear it's going to. What are your thoughts, Ron?
Well, you know, as they get more and more desperate to hold this house of cards together, I'll give you one example. Every bank in the nation, by definition, is insolvent because they all use what's called fractional reserve banking. So they take a $1,000 deposit, and using a reserve requirement of 10%, they go out and make $10,000 worth of loans, which are long-term. The depositor can withdraw that money tomorrow morning, but those loans are long-term. So by definition, in good times, they're insolvent. But what happens is when you go in, you know, when you first start into the process and you're creating more money into circulation, you create an economic boom and prosperity, and everyone in hog heaven. But then it finally peaks out and starts back down. And as you go into a recession and a depression, which we are in now, a lot of these loans that were made become toxic and unpayable. And just to give you an idea, a month or so, Bernanke came out and said, we're going to print $43 billion of new money every month, open-ended, to buy back these mortgage-backed securities from our banking buddies. In other words, they're sitting on all this toxic paper. It's not worth nearly what it's supposed to. And so we're going to give the bankers par value and pass the debt on to the taxpayer.
Well, we're going to just see. Who do we have on the line? We have a caller. Who is the caller?
Hey, it's Angela calling from Michigan.
Angela, will you just hang on there for just a minute? We'll be with you in just a moment after this quick break. Okay.
Right.
Go ahead, Angela. Hang on. We'll be back in a moment.
All right.
This is Dr. Stan. We have Angela on the line. Angela, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I just wanted to know, we're talking about the American dollar losing its value. And I just wanted to know, are you saying that it's better to go out and buy gold and just get rid of the paper money that you have?
All right, well, and then how would you respond to Angela?
Well, as they print money faster and faster and faster to try to sustain this growing debt structure, all they're doing is devaluing the money in existence. So as the inflation gets faster and faster and faster, you can destroy your savings much faster. For example, most people will tell you that inflation is running at 10%. Well, where do you have your money invested? Earning 2, 3, 4%? You're losing 8% right there. So as the inflation accelerates even faster, your money's going to be destroyed at a much faster rate. So you've got to get your money out of the paper assets, because all paper assets really have a third-party risk. In other words, you're dependent on someone to honor their obligation, and as the world goes into recession and depression, no one can honor it. So a lot of paper assets are going to be defaulted on and
And I think, Angela, the answer to your question is yes, get out, certainly get out of debt, number one. Secondly, get out of paper and anything related to paper, whether it's insurance, whether it be pensions, whether it be annuities, whether it be bonds, because bonds are tied to paper, anything that is tacked to paper, to get out of it. And I really mean that very sincerely. Yes, you need some money on hand, you know, if there are emergencies. But you know, I don't know how much you have, but certainly get the majority of it into gold, silver, or to other tangible items, because they will hold value. Paper money is not worth papers printed on. Anything else you'd like to ask, Angela?
Yes, I also wanted to find out, the country owes billions of dollars. Now, I'm just wondering, who does this country owe the money to?
All right. You want to answer that, Ron?
Well,
hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Angela calling from Michigan. And she was saying, you know, our country owes billions of dollars or trillions of dollars. Who do we owe the money to? And would you like to answer that?
We owe it to a lot of people. Anyone that has a pension plan and they've bought U.S. Treasury bonds, we owe it to the citizens. Any country that has bought U.S. The United States has been the world's reserve currency, so most countries would store their reserve savings in dollar instruments. So they're buying these U.S. Treasury bonds, Treasury papers.
Ron, do you have a radio on in the background there?
No, not me.
All right. You must have the radio on there. But basically, what they're doing, you have to understand that China holds about $1 trillion in our loans. That's certainly probably if you get together with Germany and Japan and two or three others, they own $3 or $4 trillion of our debt. the largest holder of our debt is our own Federal Reserve System, which has created the money out of nothing. And the only reason this has not created inflation is because the banks are holding about $2 trillion. They're just not lending it out. The corporations are holding a couple of trillion dollars. They're simply not spending it or investing it. But if the banks ever started lending, or the corporations started investing in new buildings or certainly in machinery, why, we would have a runaway inflation. But right now, they're keeping the money from getting into circulation. Once that ends, hang on to your hat. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I believe it does. It's just such a mess.
Understand that many here in America, many insurance companies are invested in American Treasury bills. A lot of people have their pensions in Treasury bills. A lot of the annuities are invested in Treasury bills because they think they're safe, and they are if they have a stable currency. But we no longer have a stable currency. Basically, when Jimmy Carter became president, why, the national debt was about $800 billion. When he left, the national debt was $1 trillion. Ronald Reagan criticized Jimmy Carter for adding $200 billion to the national debt in 4 years. And yet, of course, Ronald Reagan added $200 billion in national debt. Every year he was in office, when he left office, the national debt was $2.7 trillion. When George W. Bush became president many years later, the national debt was about $5.7 trillion. When George Bush left the presidency, after 8 years, why, of course, the federal debt had increased to about $10.7 trillion. And Barack Hussein Obama in 4 years has increased the national debt over $5.5 trillion. He is intent upon destroying the value of our currency, but then so was George W. Bush. They're working towards the same goal, and that is the destruction of our currency and the impoverishment of our people. Any other questions, Angela?
No, it's a sad thing, and it's just unfortunate that we are living in these times, and if people don't wake up, downhill.
Your job is to get those people out there where you live and try to get them listening to our program and get the information they're not going to get elsewhere. God bless. Thanks for calling. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295. If you have a question or comment, our guest is Ron Brown. And Ron, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and get the emails that you sent out. How can they get in touch with you?
My telephone number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, just speak up just a little bit louder. Go ahead. Okay, and then, of course, you do send out periodic emails, don't you?
Yeah, what I do is, you know, every day I just read dozens of articles, and when I see something I think particularly important, I have people that I put on my email list, and I'll just forward that to people to get, keep them in touch with the things that I think are keeping them abreast of what's going on. And things are really starting to accelerate now, so people really need to be aware of what's happening.
Well, now they tell us that things are really getting better over in Europe. Greece is going to be able to borrow, I don't know, $50 billion, something like that, $40 or $50 billion. Because the trouble with Greece is you've got 25% unemployment of the general population, 50% unemployment of the young people. And more people are actually just picking up and leaving Greece because the businesses are shutting down, the whole structure of government shutting down. Do you think that this $40 or $50 billion are going to be lent? I don't know the exact amount, but apparently they are going to get a loan. Do you think that will solve Greece's problems?
Oh, for maybe 2 weeks, you know. All they're doing is just running, you know, how do you solve a debt crisis by increasing debt at a faster and faster pace? That doesn't solve the problem. It just exacerbates the problem. So they have to talk because it's a confidence game. They got to try to convince people that things are better than they are. When in reality, you know, the people on food stamps is exploding upwards. Businesses are not, you know, keeping the pace. So we're in a serious recession approaching a total depression. And at some point, the confidence will totally collapse. You just can't keep
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. Speaking of food stamps, the latest figure I saw was there are 47.5 million Americans on food stamps today. 47.5 million Americans. About 150 million Americans are getting one form or another of government subsidies, whether it be Medicaid. There are 100 million people on Medicare and Medicaid together. And then, of course, we have all these people on food stamps. We have 56. We had this a couple of years ago, 56 million people on Social Security, and most of those people are on Medicare. And by my calculation, we got about 150 million people who are getting something from the government, and that's wonderful. I mean, basically, we've got a wonderful society. The only trouble is that the government doesn't have any money. It's having to borrow 46 cents out of every dollar it spends. How long do you think they can continue doing that before the whole system collapses? And as Ron says, they're just trying to hold this together for a little bit longer. And basically, I don't know whether they're going to be able to hold it together a year or 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. But sooner or later, this whole house of cards, financial house of cards, is coming down as other countries begin, of course, to lose confidence in America, and as the economy of Europe and China and Asia and India begin to grind down. And people don't understand that. There's articles just in the Wall Street Journal I was reading, you've probably seen it, Ron, pointing out that India has all of these natural resources. They've been laying this in so they could manufacture, and they have massive supplies of copper. But, of course, they're not producing enough to use the copper. They have massive supplies of cotton for, you know, creating apparel and clothing, but they're not getting the orders for it. And they have massive supplies of certainly of all sorts of minerals and of various products that you use in manufacturing. But the whole manufacturing industry of China is beginning to grind to a halt. In fact, many of the people living in the cities are beginning to move back to the country because at least they can get a job there working on the farms. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And you read the newspaper, we see, of course, where the Citigroup is going to be laying off 11,000 workers. Barclays Bank is laying off 2,000 workers. All across America, we're seeing massive layoffs. I think we're going to see a lot more layoffs starting the first of the year. When the government tells you that we're getting more employment, you know, and the unemployment's down to 7.6%, they're simply lying. They're giving you the U2 figures, which they've doctored. And, of course, this is the Christmas time when they've certainly all the stores are laying in a lot more people. But the real unemployment, at least according to John Williams, is running about 22%. That's the U6 unemployment. Unemployed, underemployed, given up looking for work. Those are the government statistics. They would admit that that's 15%. But, of course, they doctored the figures. What do you think, Sydney, about the unemployment? Are we really coming out of the recession, or have we ever come out of the recession? Have we been in the recession the whole time, and they've been lying to us?
Well, they've been lying to us. You know, after you've been on unemployment a certain amount of time, they take you off the rolls because you're not looking for a job anymore. So yeah, they're doctoring up the figures. Then, of course, they're running the printing press to create the illusion that the economy is improving. But if you're inflating or devaluing the currency or inflating the currency at a rate of 10%, and even though you may say gross national product is increased by 5%, it's mostly due to the inflation and the devaluation. In other words, you're not producing as many widgets, but it's costing more, so you say we have growth. We don't really have any growth in terms of annual production as far as units of production. So we're going deeper and deeper, and they're just camouflaging what's going on through this inflationary process.
And I really think you're absolutely right. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question, but these things are vitally important. People have to understand that nations are destroyed when they monetary system collapses, and our monetary system is in the process of collapsing today. You cannot continue spending money you don't have. You cannot continue borrowing 46 cents out of every dollar you spent. You and I can't do it, and the government can't do it indefinitely. Well, Ron, what do you think is going to happen next?
Well, I just think confidence is eroding at a very fast pace. Let me give one example of how they keep kicking the can down the road. We're talking about how these banks are sitting on all these toxic assets that aren't worth nearly what they're worth. And if they had to mark to the market, most of your banks would be not only insolvent but illiquid. So a few years ago, the FASB, which is the Federal Accounting Standards Bureau, came out with some new rules, and they said, we're going to change the way banks have to report. They can now value their assets at whatever they choose. In other words, they may be sitting on a $1 million mortgage on a house that's worth $500,000 if it was sellable, but they're showing it on their books at $1 million. So they're sitting on all these toxic assets, and now the Fed, as I pointed out, is going to buy up $43 billion of that toxic paper to take it off the books of the bankers and pass it on to us, the taxpayers. So they're just doing ever more desperate things to hold this house of cards together. And you throw in this whole concept of rehypothecation we discussed, it just shows you how desperate they really are getting.
Well, you're really talking about buying up $45 billion every month indefinitely, and they're talking about for maybe for years until they get the unemployment rate down to 6.5%. They're lying about the unemployment rate. Even the Bureau of Labor Statistics gives you and publishes the U6 unemployment, which is about 15%. According to their figures, they use the figures that are known to be unreliable, and then they lie about them. So basically, if they're going to continue buying up certainly Treasury bonds, $40 billion a month, and certainly then, of course, the toxic mortgages for $45 billion a month. They're talking about pouring $85 billion a month into our economy to try to stimulate it and keeping the interest rates very, very low. And despite the fact they've been doing it for some time, the economy is still very sluggish. In fact, it's more sluggish in the last couple of months than it was 6 months ago. Isn't that true, Ron?
Absolutely. And the more they print money, it's like a vicious cycle. The more money you print to keep the day reckoning, the more you destroy confidence. So in the example I used, it's like the tiger chasing his tail, and it's going so fast at this point, all you can see is a blur. So all I know to tell people is make up some pancakes because the butter is on its way. This whole thing is on the approach of melting down. And just the fact, to put it into perspective, we just discussed their printing $85 billion of new money every month. To put that in perspective, most of the experts would say that $35 to $50 billion would buy all silver in the world at these prices. So the governments are printing enough funny money every month to buy two times the world's supply of silver. Does that put it in perspective?
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for Ron, give us a call. But you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that if you put off suddenly getting your financial affairs in order, you may not have to worry about it 6 months from now because you may not have any financial affairs. Certainly, the history of the destruction of great nations certainly parallels the destruction of their monetary system. And for whatever reason there may be, the people who are in charge of ours seem to be intent upon destroying it. And even some of the people on the Federal Reserve Board are sounding warnings saying, we cannot keep printing money. Or we cannot keep low interest rates indefinitely. One day there's going to be terrible consequences of our current financial policies. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. And, the whole...
Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Hey, do you have a comment?
Just a couple of quick comments. I'm a farmer in Central New York, and what they've done with is destroy the farm base of our finances. We have one gentleman in the area that, after about probably a two-hour discussion, could describe how they financially pay the farmer and by the federal milk, you know, board, and we just came to the light that the milk hauler that just takes our milk from the farm to the cheese factory gets paid approximately $20 a hundred pounds, where the farmer has been paid approximately $14 to $16 a hundred with all his investment and with all the crop failure risks and even with the milk risk. If the milk hauler hauls the milk and it spoils on him, he charges the farmer back, blaming him for the spoiled milk, even though he has an unrefrigerated truck. Again, it's the powers to be that has that $20 a hundred and has corrupted and destroyed the economic base of the farmer, who generates approximately 20 jobs per farm of businesses. And again, if you go to confined annual financial reports, it shows that the IRS generates about $300 billion a month in three different ways, and it only costs them $27 billion a month to pay the bills. They haven't got money for us, but they have money for like the HR Bill 658, which is 30,000 drones with 450 million rounds of ammunition and 600 flying hours. They have money for new road signs, which are expensive, but we didn't need new road signs across the entire United States. They have money for whatever they want, but they don't have it for us to be able to use.
You're absolutely right, John. We're going to have to let you go. God bless. Thanks very much for calling, and I just hope and pray that you're going to be able to hold out, and the other farmers are going to be able to hold out, especially when this whole house of cards comes down. Just certainly cut back, get out of debt, and God bless. Thanks for calling. Ron, do you have a parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, you know, that brings up back in 1980-81, I remember I had two farmers come into my office, and they explained that for 10 years, they had gone to...
Hold that thought, hold that thought. Go right ahead, Ron. You said that these two farmers had come into your office, and they explained what now?
For 10 years, they had to borrow money from the home loan bank, $100,000, knowing before they ever planted that they were going to lose money. But if they didn't plant, they would call in the loans and they would lose their farm. So they've got these farmers trapped in this thing where they just go deeper and deeper into debt, and it's been going on for years. So he's hitting it right on the nose. The farmers are being, you know, sucked into a trap, and just like most Americans are, because they're losing their savings.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I think that really our small manufacturers, more and more of our small companies are shutting down, and yet small companies are the backbone of America. Certainly, as of a year ago, we'd already lost over 40,000 companies here in America. They've said they either gone out of business or gone overseas, and I'm sure that number is going to continue to grow. What is your advice for our listeners out there, Ron?
Well, you know, there's an old saying, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. And most of us have been raised in a society where you have traditional investments, your stocks, your bonds, or whatever. And it's hard for them to wake up to the reality that all those assets are being destroyed by inflation. And so they have to wake up and start thinking outside the box. Because if they don't, I mean, how many people do we know, Dr. Stan, that over the last 5, 6, 7 years have lost fortunes in the real estate market, stock market, or whatever, and people just need to wake up and protect their assets and get their money out of paper, which is being destroyed, and get it into something tangible, get out of debt, so they can survive what's happening.
I certainly agree with you. Well, certainly, now, as more and more people are, hopefully, will start buying gold and silver, and I know that you've told me that a lot of people, fairly large investors, are beginning to turn to gold and silver, but certainly there is not that much gold and silver readily available, is there? If 3 or 4 or 5% of the American people begin buying gold and silver, wouldn't we be out of gold and silver in a relatively short period of time?
Oh, it could almost happen overnight, Dr. Stan. Remember back in 2008 when Lehman Brothers went under, March 17th?
Right, yeah.
In one day, every dealer in this country ran out of anything to sell. What happened is the bags of silver and the silver eagles went to a 75% premium over the spot price, which is being rigged by the futures market. So when people finally wake up and realize that the real thing is the only thing that counts, then this thing will hit the fan and things will just explode very, very quickly.
I agree with you. Hang on there. We're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's been Ron Brown. Ron, one more time, I want you to get out your telephone number and your email so people can get in touch with you.
That's 1-800-595-0561.
Okay, God bless, and thanks very much, and look forward to talking to you again next month.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and basically, we have a couple of talks on this subject. One of them is called the Financial Tsunami. The other is called the Financial Armageddon. They come with syllabuses. They're 5 or 6 years old. But, of course, we were anticipating what's happening today long ago and trying to get people to invest in gold and silver. And those have done very, very well. Unfortunately, most people believe things are going to get better, and I have to tell you this, I hate to do it, but the America we have known no longer exists because we have a small group of people who control both political parties. I call them the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read my book, you need to get it, The Brotherhood of Darkness. Now, we are actually offering a case of that book, and basically, the book ordinarily sells for $12.95 each, but you can get a case of them for $150. 64 copies, you can sell them, you can give them away, do whatever you'd like. But of course, you'll certainly be helping us, but it's also a vehicle by which you can reach others and you can change their lives. And certainly, then of course, we would also suggest that if you would like a copy of Ambassador Henry Cooper's talk on the threat of an EMP attack, and you buy a case of books and ask for it, we'll send you a copy of that DVD without charge. It's vitally important that you understand there is a very real danger of an electromagnetic pulse attack on America. And basically, the members of Congress, overwhelmingly, almost unanimously, both Democrats and Republicans, voted several years ago to appropriate billions of dollars to protect our grid lines, our electric lines, so that we could not be destroyed. This country could be destroyed and put back to the 19th century with an EMP attack. And I will tell you that there are many people in Washington, D.C., who I personally know, who are making preparations to get out of America because they know some major event is going to occur. And I know that, for instance, they have these underground bases all across America. Jesse Ventura has gone into this. Our friend Bob Fletcher has explored this. There's no question. They have the underground bunkers fully staffed with food and water and medicines so that they can stay there literally for months or years if necessary. When the cataclysmic event occurs, we don't know what it's going to be. But make your preparations. But right now, if you can possibly buy a case of our books, it'll help us so we can reprint it. It'll help you to reach others. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and get a case of Brotherhood of Darkness, and then give them to your friends and your relatives. It could be the best thing you could possibly do for them. If we can get them to read the book, they'll begin to understand what is really going on in the world. And then, of course, you can, as I mentioned earlier, you can get from us the talk that was given by Ambassador Henry Cooper at our October 21st conference here in the Monterey Bay area. It's called The Threat of an EMP Attack. You really need to get Roslyn Peterson's DVD. This was from a year ago on geoengineering. You need to get the Sydney Betty Martini's DVD on aspartame. It was developed as a biological warfare agent. And when they found it was sweet, they put it in tens of thousands of products that are available in America, and they've targeted our children with a product that breaks down to methanol and formaldehyde. Why would anybody do that? You can get these various DVDs on geoengineering, how they're altering the atmosphere, how they're altering our weather, certainly on the financial problems, on the threat of an EMP attack, by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Then we ask you to give serious consideration to getting a case of Brotherhood of Darkness. We won't bill you until we've actually started printing. It'll be a month or two. But our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from
above. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring, and I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course, for the next hour, hopefully, they're going to be the views of William Grigg. William, for us for many years, the senior editor of the New American Magazine. He has worked for Republic Magazine at times. Certainly at the present time, why, of course, he has his own blog. He writes very frequently for LouRockwell.com, and a wonderful source of information. In fact, he's been good enough to help us with my newsletter since I'm getting on a little bit in years and I need the time. And it was taking me just too long to write a newsletter. Why, William is doing the monthly Radio Liberty newsletter, and we certainly always look forward to certainly his latest views. We actually have his latest newsletter. It's gone out just a few days ago, going into what's happening to America financially, and I'm looking forward to seeing the December letter. It should be here very, very shortly. But hopefully we can get William Grigg passed on through to us, because, of course, I would give him the opportunity to talk about whatever he'd like to talk about. But I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that America is changing, and it's changing very rapidly. There is an increasing incidence of violence all across America, and fairly all across the world. But, I mean, certainly we've slaughtered, we've killed. America has killed 46,000 innocent civilians over there in Syria. We are financing and arming and training. We call them the freedom fighters in Syria. These are not freedom fighters, ladies and gentlemen. These are terrorists who are overthrowing the government there. Yes, Assad is not a good person, but of course I fear that they're going to be a far worse government there than they had before. We've overthrown the government of Mubarak in Egypt. We finance the terrorists there. We finance the terrorists who overthrew Tunisia. We financed the terrorists who overthrew the government of Libya and slaughtered their tens of thousands of civilians. And now we've slaughtered so far approximately 46,000 civilians in Syria. And then, of course, there are hundreds of thousands. It's probably about 300,000 Jordanian refugees who fled from the cities there, and they're living either in refugee camps in Turkey or in Jordan. And where is the outcry? I mean, where does anybody say, you know, we should stop funding revolutions throughout the world? We should stop funding the revolutionary movement throughout the world. They're lying to the American people when they're saying, oh, why, this is a spontaneous uprising. This is a civil war. Ladies and gentlemen, these are not Syrians. These are professional murderers. Many of them are al-Qaeda. They've come from other countries. They've been trained in both Jordan and Turkey by American special forces. We are arming them. We are killing the civilians over there. And where is the outcry from our religious leaders, from our political leaders? William Grigg, thanks very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you.
What are we going to talk about this evening?
inevitably we're going to talk about the horrible thing that happened in Connecticut today and how that's entirely typical of the times in which we live, and it makes visible something that people are ignoring in this country, and that is the preponderance of our government's influence and the violence that you're describing. Things of the sort that happened today are happening every day somewhere in the world, being sponsored and carried out by the government that rules this or people working on it.
And it's basically, ladies and gentlemen, if there'd been someone in that school that had a weapon to defend the children, why this never could have happened? If you have guns, the more guns you have, the less crime. They know in the areas where other people have the right to keep and bear arms. Why, of course, you have very little violence. Take away the weapons, and of course you'll allow mad people to go in and create terrible violence. We'll be back in a moment. William, go right ahead.
It's entirely correct that every time there's a civilian disarmament program put into effect, and that's, by the way, a far apter description of what we're discussing than gun control. It's the targeted disarmament of law-abiding civilians. Every time an initiative of that sort is put into place, it offers a competitive advantage to those who are inclined toward evil actions, either as a result of conscious, deliberate evil or as the result of some derangement. Who knows whether we're talking about an error of hardware, software, or the operating system. We didn't design the human body. We didn't design the human mind. We don't understand the mysteries of the soul. We pretend to, but we don't. But the point is that somewhere, either in the sin nature of each of us or in some defect that is incidental to a person's makeup, you can find these impulses for evil. And unfortunately, they tend to manifest themselves more forcefully when innocent people are disarmed and helpless. And of course, we deal with derangement, we deal with criminal action by people who are of malicious mind in pretty much every realm of life. There has to be some kind of compensatory preparedness on the part of those of us who are law-abiding and innocent. And you're entirely correct, Dr. Stan, when you say that if there had been somebody in that schoolhouse, bear in mind, this is a schoolhouse that just within the last week or so had undergone a training exercise dealing with this kind of an emergency. We saw just how effective government training protocols are in dealing with circumstances of this sort, as is the case every time this kind of thing happens. The gunman completed what he had set out to do. Who knows if this is something that was hatched out of, once again, evil intent, out of some kind of clinical condition, if he was put up to it. The point is that he controlled the circumstances. He controlled the milieu. He was the individual who took the initiative and ended the engagement on his own terms before the police could show up. The police showed up, as they always do, just in time to string up the crime scene tape and to draw the chalk outlines of the victims. They are consummately useless in dealing with circumstances like this, just as was the case at the Clackamas Mall earlier this week in Portland, where a young man in his 20s, who apparently had psychological problems, and some of them had to do with the fact that he wasn't allowed into the Marine Corps, shot up a shopping mall and then ended the engagement by killing himself. In that instance, the sheriff's deputies showed up just after the gunman had killed himself.
And, of course, basically, of course, it had not been that the gun jammed, why, he would have killed a lot more people. He only killed two or three. But it was just simply fortuitous or an act of God. Otherwise, it could have been just a horrible, horrible slaughter again.
Exactly. And in that case, I found it interesting that the Clackamas, I believe it's Clackamas County, I can't remember what the name of the county.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Craig. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're just talking about these tragic shootings, certainly the one today in Connecticut, and then there was another one in Washington, and of course the shooter was only killed two and wounded one, and his gun jammed. Had it not jammed, why, of course, he could have shot so many and killed so many more people. But ladies and gentlemen, if there had been somebody in the mall in Washington with a weapon, they could have stopped him. Had there been anybody in that school, as in Connecticut, with a weapon, they could have stopped this. When you disarm the people, you leave them open to slaughter. Why are our politicians demanding we take the guns away from the people, where we know statistically in the communities where people have the right to keep and bear an arm and have a concealed weapon on them, the incidence of gun crime goes down. It goes down greatly. Whereas, of course, what we're doing is making every school and every shopping mall and certainly every sporting event in America a shooting gallery, as long as we restrict the right of the people to keep and bear arms, as is laid out in our founding constitution. Go right ahead, William.
Not only are they turning us into a population that is cattle penned in free fire zones, sort of controlled hunting zones for maniacs and criminally inclined people, but they're also creating little garrison state environments where the victims can't leave of their own accord. And in the case of what happened at the shopping mall earlier this week, I found it interesting that the sheriff pointed out that the deputies took the initiative and went into the shopping mall before the SWAT team arrived. Now, I find that significant for two reasons. The first of which is that, once again, they were too late to do anything to help. The deputies were. And there are probably some good people among the deputies in that sheriff's office. I found that county sheriffs tend to be a little bit better than municipal police departments in this respect. But this illustrates something about SWAT teams that I think is worth underscoring, and that is the fact that they are not constituted in a way to protect us in circumstances of this kind. When there's an active shooter scenario at a shopping mall or at a school of some sort, by the time the SWAT team shows up, what was going to happen has already happened. And what they do basically is take control of the scene after the damage has been done and the shooter has probably killed himself. Very, very rarely. It's a vanishingly rare situation where the SWAT team actually takes out a shooter. It does happen from time to time, but once again, it's almost inconceivably rare, so rare as to be effectively zero in terms of its impact. But SWAT teams are used all the time for other things. And I am of the opinion that the purpose of the SWAT team is not the advertised function of dealing with active shooter scenarios or hostage situations or urban terrorism. SWAT teams exist to intimidate and confiscate. They exist to carry out armed raids for narcotics enforcement and the confiscation of property. Or they exist for the purpose of intimidating the public when there's so much as a faint tremor of widespread discontent and unrest, the way that happened in Anaheim earlier this year as a result of a number of completely unnecessary shootings by police, and some behavior on the part of police that betokened more of an urban gang sensibility than peace officers. He had SWAT teams kitted out in full military attire that were driving military vehicles in the streets of Anaheim in the shadow of Disneyland, for heaven's sake. That's a much more familiar and commonplace use of SWAT teams than anything that would involve protecting people in a shopping mall or in a classroom setting. But if there had been somebody in that classroom today, somebody in that environment, somebody in that schoolhouse who was armed and knew how to make useful, how to make appropriate use of that weapon, it's entirely possible that at least some of those children could have been saved. Those 20 children and I believe the 8 adults who were murdered could have been saved, or at least they would have had a fighting chance. But earlier this week, as I pointed out, they underwent a training exercise that was based on the government scenario here, which has nothing to do with promoting or recognizing the ineffaceable and indispensable right of armed self-defense. So they followed the rules that they had been taught just a few days ago, and as a result, you have 28 people dead, 20 of them children between the ages of 5 and 10, and another push, once again, to expand civilian disarmament, which would have made no impact here, had no impact in terms of expanding the regulations that would have been imposed on the individual who allegedly did the shooting, because those were not his firearms. They were the firearms apparently that belonged to his mother, who was one of his first victims. And so today you have Mayor Bloomberg from New York City and a rent-a-protest clique gathering around the White House promoting universal comprehensive civilian disarmament, which again would put us at the mercy of the criminally inclined, because criminals by definition do not obey laws. They don't obey laws, whether they're just or unjust. There's nothing just about a law that would disarm the innocent public, but there's no reason to think that criminals would obey unjust laws any more than they're inclined to obey laws against the aggressive violence that they perpetrate against the innocent. But this is, once again, sort of the standard off-the-shelf narrative that we hear. Every time somebody engages in high-profile criminality that results in the death of innocent people, we're told that the problem is not criminals. The problem is that we have an insufficient number of laws to restrict what the innocent can do by way of defending ourselves. And there's very little criticism that's being offered for the staggering and repellent hypocrisy of President Obama today. as he mounted the dais there in the White House and read the prefabricated comments containing the familiar facile expressions of targeted and selective sympathy. On a day that follows a car bombing in the outskirts of Damascus carried out by a terrorist group that is supported, materially aided by the Obama administration, that killed 24 people, many of them children. He has command responsibility for that act because it is his policy that is putting the material and means in the hands of that terrorist group that is conducting terrorist attacks in Syria.
Well, but I think what we have to ask is, who is financing the terrorists over there in Syria? Who is sort of arming them? Who is providing the military vehicles? Who is providing the jet-propelled munitions? You don't simply go out and buy a machine gun. So you have to get this through some sort of a governmental agency. And I would like to suggest American tax dollars at work, and people who are funding and financing these terrorists, as you say, are responsible for them. But directly or indirectly, they should be held guilty of murder. If you fund a man knowing he's going to use a weapon, and you provide the weapon for him and he kills somebody, you are guilty of sin.
Well, it's a principle that's discussed in one of my favorite works of recent American literature. It's the novel Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry, which talks about the exploits of fictionalized versions of real people, the Texas Rangers of ancient lore. And there's a scene where they come across a group of horse rustlers who had stolen a bunch of livestock, and then come across a group of sodbusters that robbed the sodbusters. They killed the settlers and then strung them up and burned their bodies. And one of the people who was involved in this atrocity was a friend of the main characters in the novel, Captain Call and Woodrow Call and Gus McCrae. His name was Jake Spoon, and he had just drifted into the company of this outlaw band, and it wasn't his intention to kill anybody, but just by momentum he went along with all those acts. And so when they held a trial and ended up hanging the rustlers, they had to hang their friend, and they explained to him that the principle was, if you ride with an outlaw, you die with him. And that means, of course, that if you've chosen to take part, an active part in criminal acts, you are guilty. You share the guilt of those acts, whether you're the person pulling the trigger or driving the getaway car. When you're talking about somebody who is a political official, an elected official, or somebody who's appointed to a position of responsibility, there's a principle in the common law called command responsibility. This goes all the way back to, well, at least the 15th century and the Glorious Revolution, 15th, 16th century and the Glorious Revolution in England, when it was made clear that as a matter of subtle law rooted in biblical principle, that the king bears the responsibility for the orders he gives that result in crimes that are committed against the innocent. Now, interestingly enough, Dr. Stan, just in the last couple of weeks, the former prime minister of Thailand, I think I might have discussed this with you last week, the former prime minister of Thailand has found himself in the dock facing murder charges because people working for security forces that answer to him killed unarmed protesters, innocent, peaceful protesters, as they were putting down protests in that country before the prime minister was removed from office. So he faces the prospect of life behind bars, the residue of his mortal life behind bars, if he's found guilty of having command responsibility for acts he did not explicitly order or endorse particularly, specifically, but were carried out under his supposed authority. That's what's going on in Thailand. In this country, you've got a president who presides over an apparatus of industrial murder that every single day, somewhere on the face of this planet, is killing at least the same number of people, including children, who are killed today in Newtown, Connecticut. And he apparently is utterly immunized from any accountability whatsoever. He was reelected with, apparently, accounting for fraud and other chicanery, what appears to be a substantial margin. He just recently was the target of some interesting comments by the head of the Nobel Peace Prize Committee, saying that Mr. Obama should consider returning his award, which, of course, would, I suspect, go a very modest distance toward rehabilitating the moral credibility of that award, whatever that's worth. My opinion is that anybody who receives the Nobel Peace Prize is the sort of a person who's not fit for civilized company, and of course the award given to Mr. Obama tends to underscore and, I think, vindicate that perception. But the thing is, as I mentioned just yesterday, on the outskirts of Damascus, you had this terrorist group, al-Nusra, conduct a car bombing that was carried out by people who were being armed and financed by Saudi Arabia and by Washington, being trained in Jordan and in Turkey. This is a group that is part of a coalition that was recognized by Mr. Obama a few days ago as the supposedly legitimate representative of the Syrian people, whom they are killing with such abandon. This is the same person who stepped to the dais today and underwent a less than plausible pantomime of being choked up with emotion as he talked about the horrible thing that happened in Connecticut today. It was a spectacle of repellent hypocrisy, but it's typical of our public life today.
And, Chris, what really bothers me, of course, is that we do not hear our religious or certainly our political leaders speaking out about the 46,000 innocent Syrian civilians who've been slaughtered by the people that we've sent over there to topple the government. William, you go right ahead.
We don't hear about the depredations being committed by the so-called Syrian resistance, many of whom are an outgrowth of groups that were funded in Libya to carry out the same thing against Muammar Gaddafi. And, of course, Gaddafi, like Bashar al-Assad, was a pretty horrible specimen. And like Bashar al-Assad, Gaddafi had been a subcontractor for the United States under the Bush administration and was thrown away, as Assad apparently will be, when he was no longer useful. And now you see the same thing happening in Mali over in the western part of Africa. There are people who have been part of this diaspora of radical jihadis who were funded by the United States and Libya, who've migrated to Mali and taken over a large part of the country. And now we see that the United States is putting together a military coalition of that would be under the command of AFRICOM, the African Command. It's interesting that the Pentagon presumes to divide the entire world up into military commands that would be under the jurisdiction of the United States, supposedly. There's no other country on earth that does that. But I don't think there's ever been a power that's presumed to do that before the United States.
Well, but William, this is basically the whole idea that we actually have an empire. And
yeah.
These are the divisions of our empire. The African division, the South American division, the North American division, the European division, certainly the Near East division, the Asian division. We have certainly commands in all of these areas, and basically because we have an empire, and they're using the financial and military power of the United States to establish and maintain this empire, which is why we have over 1,000, that's the latest figure, over 1,000 military bases throughout the world. Does anybody really think that they are defending the United States? Why do we have them here in America? Why are we having them throughout the world? Because we are dominating the world, but we can't let the American people understand what's really going on. Go right ahead.
Here's something that is a very important coefficient to what you're saying, Dr. Stan. Today, practically everybody who's plugged into the media here in the United States has been saying the same thing. What could possess somebody to undertake an act of such unregenerate evil that he would kill children in an onslaught against the school? And the name, of course, of Adam Lanza now is being spoken of in the context of mass murderers, ancient, modern. And he is now the embodiment, the incarnation of evil in the minds of hundreds of millions of Americans. Now imagine how we would feel if we were the inhabitants of a country roughly half the size of the United States, where on a weekly basis, and sometimes on a daily basis, there is a massacre of comparable magnitude being carried out by a distant power that is prohibitively stronger than us, where children who are going to school or attending worship services or attending the funerals of some of their friends and family who have been killed at any moment can be dispatched by drone-fired missiles that attack without warning and that involve themselves in what are called double tap strikes. That is to say, there's an initial missile attack, and then a few minutes later, after the first responders arrive to try to save the wounded and to do what they can to protect those who've been terrified by that strike, when the first responders arrive, there's a second strike to take out the first responders as an act of gratuitous cruelty and deliberate terrorism. the government that impudently presumes to rule us is doing that in
hold fact, that, hold that thought, William. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening is William Grigg. We do have a caller. We ordinarily don't take calls when we have William, but I thought that simply with the unfolding situation, the things are moving very, very rapidly in Syria, and somebody has a call, and I think it's important that we at least address the issue. For those of you who do not know, why NATO is, which is really simply an extension of the United States, NATO is the world army, and we finance the majority of the finances for this world army, and we certainly direct what goes on. NATO always has a UN commander. We are almost always has a UN commander. United States commander. And we are supplying Patriot missiles to Turkey so that they can actually use those against the Syrian Air Force if they try to use their Air Force to stop the terrorists who we are financing there. And now, of course, there's talk about American troops going into Turkey. There's also talks about possibly British and French troops going into Turkey in preparation for an invasion of Syria. Now, the justification for the invasion of Syria is that Syria has chemical weapons. They don't talk much about the biological weapons, but Syria has chemical weapons, and of course, we can't have those fall into the hands of the terrorists who are financing, so we're going to have to go in and make sure the wicked terrorists who we finance and train do not end up with the chemical weapons. But nobody ever asked where the chemical weapons came from. Did Assad produce them? No, he got them from Saddam Hussein. And where did Saddam Hussein get them? We gave it to them. And we have articles, if anybody wants to see them, written 10 years or more ago in the Washington Post, talking about how we gave chemical and biological weapons to Saddam Hussein. Actually, you can go up on the internet. Apparently, Bechtel Corporation had helped to build those over, many of them over in Iraq. Chemical weapons that were certainly used in both in the war with Iran and killing Kurds. They killed about 100,000 Kurds. We don't know how, they say 3,000 to 5,000 Kurds were killed with the chemical weapons that we provided for Saddam Hussein. But nobody's ever held us responsible for that or for all the children who were killed by chemical weapons in the war between Iran and Iraq. And now, of course, Saddam has those chemical weapons, and we do have a caller on the line. If our producer would like to pass him through, he has a question certainly about the American troops, or at least the Allied troops, NATO troops, going into Turkey in preparation for an invasion. It certainly looks like we're going to have an invasion of Syria, which I believe, of course, is a prelude, a forerunner of a war with Iran. What are your thoughts on that, William?
I do think that they're looking for a backdoor to a war with Iran, and that the constant refrain that Syria is a proxy for Iran in the region, and that Hezbollah and Hamas are proxies for both of them, there's some truth to that description. All of that's meant to set up some kind of a mathematical model where, in dealing with Syria, we're actually fighting Iran. And there's a number of analyses I've read, one of them by Gerald Salenti, that I think is pretty perceptive, in which Syria is being looked upon now in the same sense that Spain was looked upon in the early to mid-1930s as sort of a staging area, a theater for a dress rehearsal, if you will, for the war that eventually erupted between the Axis and the Allies, that you had the Soviets supporting the communist side, the so-called Republican side in Spain, and that the loose coalition of rightist groups, the Falangist-led groups in Spain, were being supported by Italy and by Germany. And that's not because the Falangists were Nazis or fascists, it's because the Nazis and the Italian fascists were interested in using Spain as sort of a shakedown cruise for a conflict. There's the same kind of thing happening right now, where you have basically a Sunni-backed coalition and NATO in Syria backing these people who are at least branded as al-Qaeda. Who knows if they're actually affiliated with al-Qaeda, which is largely a meme rather than an organization, but that they are working one half of a conflict as surrogates, and Iran supposedly is working with Assad and other elements, the same way that you had Lebanon being used back in the 1980s by Syria as a staging area. But the idea here is that there would be this kind of proxy war in Syria that eventually would create momentum for a war with Iran. And the fact that we have these troops being sent to Turkey and back to Iraq as well out of Kuwait, they're being forward positioned. The Eisenhower is in the region as well off the coast of Syria. All of this connotes to me a very likely scenario where we're going to end up with a full-fledged military action, NATO, UN, Obama administration military action in Syria, and it would be the prelude for a general war that would involve Iran, which would be catastrophic.
And of course, ladies and gentlemen, all these things are happening now, but we're not paying any attention to them. You know, we talk a little bit about what's going on over there. When was the last time anybody talked about the 46,000 civilians, innocent civilians killed over in Syria, the hundreds of thousands of refugees from Syria? What would happen if that something like that happened in America? Would anybody really care, other than America?
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair, as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, of course, is William Grigg. I heard yesterday some of the most frightening words I've ever heard. And this is, of course, a quotation, and it came from a man named Dennis Ross. And he was basically, he's supposedly the chief advisor to President Obama on matters dealing with Iran. And Dennis Ross is quoted as saying that if Iran certainly cannot be convinced they must stop working to build a nuclear weapon, then the United States will be at war with Iran in the year 2013. Did you hear that statement, William?
I've heard that. I've heard Mr. Ross say some things of that nature on a couple of occasions.
But what people do not understand is, who is Dennis Ross? I mean, we hear him, but who is Dennis Ross? Well, I will tell you who Dennis Ross is. He was assigned to the Obama administration for the Trilateral Commission. He was a member of the Trilateral Commission before he became, I think it was the senior advisor, number two or number three man of the American State Department. So basically what we're hearing today from Mr. Ross is what the invisible government, the people who are leading our certainly and controlling our government behind the scenes, who have seize control of our government. Those are the words of Barry Goldwater in his book 19 with No Apologies, published in 1979, when Barry Goldwater said that the David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission certainly was international, and its goal was to seize control of the economic and political structure, and he was referring, of course, to the world, by first seizing control of the political government of the United States. Those are Barry Goldwater's words, 1979, page 280. You can get the book, used copies through my ministry. And ladies and gentlemen, of course, we're seeing a representative of the Trilateral Commission talking about a war with Iran in the year 2013. Those are frightening words.
They're terrifying words, and they're spoken by somebody who displays the glib indifference to suffering that is typical of the caste he belongs to. They look upon the rest of us as cattle to be butchered and slaughtered and dressed as they see fit. And this is something that is happening behind the scenes, but in full view at the same time. It's not something...
Hold that thought. Hold the thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, as well. Greg, we were just talking about the fact that Dennis Ross, who is the President Obama's senior advisor in matters dealing with Iran, had said that if Iran does not stop its effort to build a nuclear weapon and did not immediately accede to our demands, that the United States would be at war with Iran in the year 2013. And he was quoted several times yesterday in various sources making that statement. And William has heard certain similar things. We're talking about a man, Dennis Ross. But, of course, Dennis Ross, nobody tells the American people that he's a member of the Trilateral Commission, or was, before he went into government. You have to understand, when you remember the Trilateral Commission and you go into government, there's only about 85 members of the North American chapter of the Trilateral Commission, and that includes the people from both Canada and Mexico, as well as the Americans. But there's only never more than 85, 87 at the most. Dennis Ross was one of them. When he went to government, he had to, of course, drop out of the Trilateral Commission. When, of course, he leaves government, he'll probably go back in again. But when he speaks today, you are hearing the position of the people who really run our government. And Dennis Ross, is from the Trilateral Commission, is talking about a war with Iran in the year 2013. Pick up the story there, William.
What that would entail, of course, would be the shutting down of the Gulf to international oil traffic. That would have a tremendous negative impact on the economy. And it would also involve an attack on a very large country that, although its economy is being wrecked even as we speak right now through an embargo and through the imposition, ironically enough, of the same kind of policies that Obama and the Federal Reserve are inflicting on us in terms of the debasement of the currency. I mean, right now, the Iranian currency is being systematically destroyed. And at the same time, they have an embargo that is creating shortages of medicine and other vital, indispensable goods that are required for the maintenance of civilized life. They're doing to Iran, in short, what they did to Iraq during the 1990s. The way of softening up the entire population for a catastrophic war. But in spite of all that, Iran is in a far better position to defend itself, owing in large measure to its topography. Iran is made primarily of hills, and the crenellated countryside offers many potential redoubts for people to hide in. Partisans can take refuge in the trackless mountain ranges that make it very difficult, of course, for a high-tech military such as the United States to play to its strength. It's very difficult to rip people out using sophisticated bombers. And, of course, you can't use armor if you're dealing with mountainous terrain. And so if we are serious about using bunker buster bombs, I shouldn't use the collective pronoun. Forgive me. That's a habit of mine I really need to break. The government that rules us, if they're serious about using bunker buster bombs and other ordnance to try to rid out these entrenched nuclear facilities, follow this up with some kind of an invasive on-site maintenance and inspection regime of the sort that they undertook in Iraq, albeit somewhat half-heartedly, because they knew that there were no WMDs there by the time they got to the locations that Rumsfeld talked about. They're serious about this type of thing. They're talking about occupying a country that would have all the disadvantages to the occupier that we find in Afghanistan, plus a much larger, much more sophisticated, much more cohesive population. So there is a great deal of ethnic and of more than a little bit of religious diversity in Iran. But there is a sense of nationhood in Iran that you don't have in Afghanistan. There are strengths and weaknesses that you could adduce to either side here. I think that there's something to be said for decentralization and the fact that the Afghans, like the Somalis, didn't really have a sense of being part of one nation, but were rather defined by loyalty to a clan and to a tribe, is actually something that has been very useful for the purposes of insurgency, fourth-generation warfare, and so forth. The case of Iran, however, you'd have all this variety of terrain and all the strategic disadvantages that would entail. Plus, you'd actually have a population that, as much as they despise that government, and a great deal of the population in Iran quite properly despises that government, they would rally to the cause of evicting the invaders from their territory. I mean, this is a country with literally thousands of years of history, contiguous cultural history going back to ancient Persia. And so I really don't think that anything good would come out of a war with Iran in terms of supposedly being a tidy and, excuse me, immediately successful affair. But I don't think that matters to people like Dennis Ross, because they don't have to pay the costs that would be incurred by this type of a venture. Just as they don't pay the cost for what happened in Iraq, they don't pay the cost for what's happened in Afghanistan and Yemen, what's going on in Pakistan and so forth. These people enjoy a status very near to impunity. And it goes back to the idea, once again, that there is no effective material accountability for the people who are policymakers who carry out the directives of this concealed secretive power elite, the Brotherhood of Darkness that you talk about.
And, of course, the one thing I would add is certainly that Iran has said that if they are attacked, they will retaliate against the great Satan and destroy it. Mm-hmm. Now, what a ridiculous statement that is. I mean, they're going to retaliate against the United States and destroy us? Well, I will tell you, you know, maybe we ought to listen to what they're saying, first of all. We know, and I've talked to several people from Washington, D.C., who tell me that the Iranians are certainly have satellites that put a nuclear missile up about 200 miles into the stratosphere, and they're practicing with this. And you hear about the Iranians putting up their missiles. Why are they putting up their missiles? Because they want to make sure they can get them up and get them in the right location. And basically, of course, the Iranians are planning on an EMP attack on the United States if we attack them. And people say, well, they don't even have nuclear weapons. How do we really know what they have? I mean, how do we know they haven't gotten them from Pakistan? I was told 20 years ago, or almost 20 years ago, by the chief researcher for the Republican Party in 1992, that actually Iran at that time had at least two atom bombs, and they probably may very well have had more, and that was 20 years ago. And he personally told me that you're never going to hear about this sort of thing. But just imagine it's true. Let's imagine they do have the nuclear weapons. We know that they have the missiles. They can put them up. And suddenly a passing freighter off the East Coast, in the Gulf, and on the West Coast, three nuclear bombs set off in the stratosphere could give an EMP attack. And according to Ambassador Henry Cooper, and I hope many of you want to get his DVD of the talk he gave here on the 21st of October of this year, Ambassador Cooper will tell you, and you'll hear him, and the same thing comes out of the Heritage Foundation, that within 6 months to a year, as many as 90% of the American population would be dead. Because, of course, the total breakdown of the structure of our society, and our people don't know how to live in a primitive way. People certainly do not have all the luxuries of the electricity and totally dependent upon a structured society would survive. But most Americans, unfortunately, would not. The diabetics would die, the elderly would die, the ill would die, the infirm would die, the people in nursing homes would die, and a vast number of other people would either starve or die of disease. Could this really happen? I don't know. But it's very interesting that apparently the Iranians are planning on this. The Congress has voted certainly almost unanimously several years ago to finance and provide billions of dollars to repair our electric grid so that it would not be susceptible to an EMP attack. The bill was killed in the Senate, was never allowed to get to the floor of the Senate. We have made no preparations. Could this really happen? What are your thoughts, William?
I think that if it doesn't happen as a result of an EMP attack from Iran or North Korea, that's another potential culprit that's often mentioned, or some other hostile foreign power, we could see our power grid overwhelmed by incident attendant to the solar maximum. We're entering the solar maximum in 2013, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, we have one big coronal mass ejection, which is the result of a superstorm where hypercharged plasma is sent earthward. We're 8 light minutes away from the sun. You know, the velocity of light is, what, 186,218 miles per second or something like that. We're 93 million miles and change away from the sun, so it takes about 8 minutes for coronal mass ejection to reach the magnetosphere around the Earth. And when it collides with the upper atmosphere, you end up with a discharge and cascading effect that wreaks havoc with all kinds of electronic communications. Everything that's operated using electronics, solenoids, or things of that sort.
And it would be exactly as it would with a nuclear attack.
Exactly.
The same electromagnetic pulse.
Yeah. It's exactly the same physics. The difference is that we're talking about something several orders of magnitude more intense than what you're likely to have as the result of a neutron bomb or a modified neutron bomb being used for an EMP, an airburst nuke, that would be something that could fry circuitry over a limited area. You're not going to have the possibility of an entire continent going dark. Just a few months ago, there was an incident where a large part of the subcontinent, a large part of India, and if I'm not mistaken, probably Pakistan as well, had not only brownouts, but blackouts as a result of a relatively minor solar eruption that ended up targeting through whatever means, that part of the atmosphere. And you've had blackouts in, that occur in Europe just in the last 6 months or so. And a lot of people have talked about how it's a good idea if you want to deal with the possibility of an EMP or something attendant to a CME, a coronal mass ejection, it's a good idea to have older automobiles that don't have sophisticated electronics. That way your car will be able to start, to keep sensitive electronics inside of a Faraday cage, which could be, I'm not an expert on the subject. I've read and listened to some lectures on it, but a Faraday cage is something that would cancel out an electromagnetic pulse. You could make one out of an anodized garbage can, for what I know. But it's relatively simple. Just Google Faraday cage. You probably find some instructions as to how to buy one or manufacture one. These are things that people can do if they're interested in providing for some fairly rudimentary but indispensable precautionary preparation having to do with the possibility of something really ugly happening. And that the possibility, of course, becomes enhanced when you have devoted stupidity and evil working their magic in Washington, D.C., you know, starting up fights overseas with countries that are ruled by admittedly evil governments that may have the capacity to wreak harm, or reciprocal harm on us.
And the fact that we're not hearing anything at all about the fact that Iran is actually preparing for an EMP attack on America in retaliation if we attack them. And basically, we actually put together a 4-CD set. We'll actually hear one of the speakers. Hopefully, we'll have those out very, very shortly. But, of course, I will tell you that I've talked to people who in the know who tell me that Iran is planning on an EMP retaliation if we attack them. And that's what's really so frightening about what's going on in Syria today. Because our invasion, or at least the NATO invasion of Syria, is simply a prelude to a war with Iran. And nobody is talking about the possibility that if we go to war with Iran, that we will not be protected by our oceans as we have been in the past, that there could be retaliation against America simply by a passing freighter. One in the Gulf, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. And, of course, America, within a matter of a few moments, would cease to exist as an industrialized nation.
One of the things that people need to take into account when we're talking about these grand geopolitical designs is that what happens overseas is likely to have some kind of adverse material impact on the lives here at home. And usually it's not the result of things that are being done to us, but things that are being done to us in retaliation for things that our government is doing, which is why we have to focus on what our government is doing, rather than allow the people, and I shouldn't use the collective possessive once again, the government ruling us. We shouldn't allow the people in the government ruling us to define our priorities by focusing us exclusively on the depravity of other governments. Yeah, the Iranian government's horrible. It's the government. Why would we expect it to be anything else? Same thing is true of Cuba. The same thing is true of Russia and China. Same thing's true of Syria and spades, of course. But the problem here is that the things that are really dangerous to us are most proximate to us. And what's going on in Iran could become of immediate material importance to us if they retaliate against things that are being done in Washington that are to nobody's benefit except for the people in the power elite like Mr. Ross and people of that ilk. And I think that, once again, as our minds are being tuned here, but what happened in Connecticut today, this horrible incident that left every parent, of course, myself, I'm the father of six, and five of them were in school today, and four of them were in school, one was homesick, and then one's too young to be in school. But like pretty much every parent who's exposed to this, I found myself shaken down to my corpuscles or even deeper by the thought of what it must be like to be one of the parents who last night tucked a child into bed, not knowing what the subsequent day would bring, and then discovering to their horror that the worst possible thing that could happen to a parent had happened that day. Well, the government ruling us is doing that. It is creating a bereaved, childless parents. Innocent people by the thousands are seeing their children be destroyed, being attacked from the air by these unreachable robot aircraft that are operated by joystick drivers in Nevada and New York and Virginia. People who've done nothing to harm us and had no reason for rancor before their families were wiped out. These people look upon Americans the way that Americans are looking upon Adam Lanza today. as killers of innocent children. That's the sort of thing that coalesces into terrorism. You know what? The people who are responsible for that, for these policies know this. And to some extent, that's an outcome they ardently desire.
Well, right now, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can read your articles, how they can get to your PayPal button.
Dr. Stan, I really appreciate that. My blog is called Pro Libertate, ProLibertate. If you go to Google and type in Pro Libertate or type in my name, Will Grigg, and chances are that the first return will be the Pro Libertate blog. William N. Grigg is my name. Just go to Google and type in William N. Grigg. Pro Libertate will show up. The direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Let's get that, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. And the PayPal button is located at the bottom of every essay. And just a few hours ago, I published an essay entitled Sandy Hook Massacre, Sympathy from the Devil. And that's a play on a Rolling Stones song title, Sympathy for the Devil. I have no sympathy for the devil, and I'm not interested in sympathy from the devil, but this loathsome spectacle of Mr. Obama's scripted and patently insincere sympathy on behalf of this group of children is something that I talk about here. Here's a guy who murdered a 16-year-old American citizen. 16-year-old Colorado-born American citizen by the name of Abdel Al-Awlaki, because the administration had put his father on a kill list. The official who informed Barack Obama today about this school shooting was John Brennan. He's the keeper of the kill list. He's the guy who presides over the Star Chamber Tribunal that puts the names of American citizens on a list of people suitable for summary execution on presidential orders. That's the subject I write about today at Pro Libertate. Once again, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. And there is a PayPal button at the end of every essay.
And certainly, William does a wonderful, wonderful job, certainly, of getting information out. He has a family of six children and a wife to support. And if you're in a position to help him, why, of course, I would appreciate it. Certainly, we support William. Yeah. We think he does a great job. And hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment right here at Radio Liberty. Well, right now we have Tim from northern New York, and he wanted to talk a little bit about Turkey. Tim, did you have a question or comment?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you doing tonight?
Doing just fine. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks. I heard earlier today in the news that we had moved 400 U.S. troops and some missiles into Turkey. It sounded pretty serious, so I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Do you have any thoughts on that at all? We know that certainly they're talking about taking American Patriot missiles and stationing them along the Syrian border. What are your thoughts, William?
Well, what that seems to suggest to me is they're looking to have a border incident, because if you recall, there was an incident earlier this year where there was a strike across the border from Syria into a largely Kurdish-occupied area of Turkey that before... I believe it was probably about 1940 or so, that part of Turkey actually belonged to Syria, and it was given to Syria by the French in order to buy them off in the build-up to World War One. And this was something where the Kurdish residents of Turkey actually blamed the Turkish government rather than the Syrians for the fact that they were put in the line of fire. When you send a group of troops to the border of a country with whom Washington is obviously planning a war, they're looking to start up trouble. It's like what happened with the war with Mexico in 1846, where they have a border incident that's ambiguous and it's used as a pretext for war. I think they're putting them out there as a dangle. I think they want to try to either to incite something or to create the impression that something has gone on, a Gulf of Tonkin, a land-bound Gulf of Tonkin type incident, to start a war with Syria as a way of building momentum for a war with Iran. But I'm incurably cynical. That's just how I see things.
Well, I certainly agree with everything William says, Tim. I believe that this is a prelude to war with Syria. I believe that the war with Syria is a prelude to a war with Iran. And unlike past wars, where, of course, we've had great oceans, the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, protect us, in the day of certainly electronics and missiles, why, I do not believe that America will certainly escape retaliation. Any other thoughts, Tim?
No, I caught most of what your guest had to say. I don't think it got too much press today because everybody was talking about Connecticut. But I appreciate you devoting a lot of your show, and I violence or guns, but I can I can really, you know, see and understand your point more that, you know, if people were armed and they knew how to use their weapons, that, you know, the damage could be, you know, kind of minimized.
Those children would be alive today. We're out of time. Tim,
okay.
God bless. Thanks for calling. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, fine. And we'll be back here in just a moment to say good night to our friend, William Green. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope, of course, that you have enjoyed the conversation this evening with William Grigg. One more time, William, how can people get to your website?
It's called Pro Libertate, and if you go and Google my name, William N. Grigg, or Pro Libertate, or some combination of the two, that should be the first return. The direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com.
Good night, God bless, and we'll be talking to you real soon. Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was William Grigg, and this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when I have to remind you that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. We have almost 50 stations, over 50 stations, or outlets every single week to carry some or all of our radio programs. And so if you're in a position to help us, we could certainly use it. You can certainly join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, get our monthly newsletter and or the four best tapes or CDs of the month. Certainly you can donate to our efforts, or you can certainly get the DVDs and CDs and other items that we carry. If you want a catalog, we'd be glad to send you one. But we do hope, of course, you give serious consideration to becoming part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Then, of course, another issue, it's time to reprint my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which I think, and perhaps I'm prejudiced, but I think it's one of the most important books we have because it explains what's really going on and takes you into an understanding of the spiritual forces that are at work today, plunging the world into a horrible, horrible holocaust that's going to affect your life and my life and the lives of those we love. And basically, of course, Brotherhood of Darkness, ordinarily the book's $12.95. Easy to read, but of course it's a very, very concise. It will give you a completely different view of the world we live in. Well, certainly you can get 64 copies of Brotherhood of Darkness, a case of Brotherhood of Darkness for $150. And if you order it, why, we'll be glad to send you either the DVD of Ambassador Henry Cooper, it's called The Threat of an EMP Attack, or certainly of one of our other DVDs, something that we produce. We'll be glad to send that to you. If you, of course, take the Brotherhood of Darkness, a case of those, and we hope that you'll do that. It costs you $150 plus shipping. But $150, we will not bill you until we have them ready to go. But what a wonderful opportunity to have a book that you can either give away or you can sell. But you need to get people to understand the true nature of the battle that we're up against. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You really must understand the true nature of the spiritual battle we're engaged in today. It is the only way you can understand the history of the last century. Well, then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get the DVD on geoengineering, certainly the climate, certainly we're having parts of the country, which even today still are having severe droughts. How does it come about? Well, we have a DVD. It's called Geoengineering. It's certainly Rosen Peterson's DVD. We actually have a four-tape set on HAARP. We have a four-tape set on chemtrails. We have a book on weather modification. We have a DVD on weather modification. We have a book on HAARP. We have a four-tape set on HAARP. And by actually heating the ionosphere, they can alter the weather patterns. You really need to understand that they are spraying. That's, of course, to you, Rosen Peterson's DVD on geoengineering. They're all available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927 because America is under attack today by a subversive element that certainly wants to destroy this country. Why is it that in Europe they won't allow fluoridated water, drinking water, but of course it's 68% of our drinking water is fluoridated? Why is it that in Europe they won't allow genetically modified food, but of course food here in the United States is genetically modified, 90% of the corn, 95% of the soybeans. you need to, Chris, to get understand this. We actually have four tape sets on genetically modified food, and we have several books on genetically modified food. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection till Monday. May the Lord be with you.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is Friday. It is December 14th, 2012. You're in the right place. Yeah, we all keep asking those questions. Most of us don't like the answers, but that's just what we got to go through. We thank you for joining us today, caring about your world. In the studio with me today, thank goodness, I've got Josh. Thank you, Josh, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You are ready on the spot, and I will probably be using your voice because I'm just having this little struggle here. No problem. I just sort of lost my voice. But you know how you come through, you know, when you haven't been feeling very well and you've been kind of out of it, and you write – and people call you and you write down notes and stuff, and then all of a sudden you start feeling better and you find all these notes, the things like don't miss the 2 p.m. conference call, whatever you do. Or the meeting on Wednesday, you must be there.
Yeah.